This is Wednesday, the 21st of December, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up on today's program, Germany hunts for a new suspect in connection with the apparent terrorist attack in Berlin. Germany's leader, Angela Merkel, hopes for a return to normal.
Ich weiß nur, wir können nicht und wir
All I know is that we can't and do not want to live without all of that. The Christmas markets, the happy hours with friends and families outside on our squares. We don't want to have to live with fear that paralyzes us.
Also ahead, what some are calling the final evacuation from Aleppo is again underway, and the science behind a new movie called Passengers, all on today's International Edition. German police and officials there say they're looking for an asylum seeker from Tunisia after finding an identity document under the driver's seat of a truck that plowed into a Berlin Christmas market and killed 12 people. That according to officials and security sources. Ralf Jäger, the interior minister of the western state of North Rhine-Westphalia, said the man appeared to have arrived in Germany in July of 2015 and his asylum application had been rejected. Jäger added the man had been considered a potential threat by security authorities since November. After being turned down for asylum, he should have been deported but could not be returned to Tunisia because his documents were missing. These new details added a growing list of questions about whether security authorities missed opportunities to prevent the attack in which a 25-ton truck mowed down a crowd of shoppers and smashed through wooden huts selling gifts, mulled wine, and sausages. It was the deadliest attack on German soil since 1980. Security forces said the ID found by the Berlin investigators was in the name of Anis A., born in the southern Tunisian city of Tatouine in 1992. By convention, suspects in Germany are identified by the first name and then an initial. A spokesperson for Tunisia's foreign ministry said it was trying to verify that information. The German Interior Ministry, Thomas de Maizière, said a Europe-wide manhunt for the suspect had been underway since midnight. VOA's Lada Tahoke reports on what has been happening at the scene of the attack.
Berlin's landmark Brandenburg Gate was illuminated in the colors of the German national flag and the colors of the City of Berlin flag Tuesday night. Victims were honored with a memorial service and a candlelight vigil at the site of the crash.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, not 2 hours before, I stood exactly at the spot where the truck drove in. I've been coming here since I was little, and I have such beautiful memories of the place.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel, accompanied by senior government officials, visited the scene of the attack and laid flowers at a makeshift shrine for the victims. She said she doesn't have a simple answer as to why someone would want to bring death to people who are out celebrating life.
Ich weiß nur, wir können nicht und wir
All I know is that we can't and do not want to live without all of that. The Christmas markets, the happy hours with friends and families outside on our squares. We don't want to have to live with fear that paralyzes us. Even if it's difficult at this hour, we will find the strength to live life the way we want to live it in Germany, free, united, and openly.
German officials say the attack was intentional. An American tourist witnessed it.
As I looked up, this truck was barreling through the market and through the stalls and through the crowd, coming almost at me.
The truck was stowed away Monday to be thoroughly examined for clues. The crash in Berlin bore strong similarities to a truck attack in the French coastal city of Nice in July that killed 86 people and wounded hundreds of others. U.S. officials and others have expressed condolences to Germany and are calling for adequate security measures in their own countries during the holiday season. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
We continue on International Edition with Andrew Palshevsky and some interesting things happening on social media.
Yeah, really intriguing story developing. It started with this YouTube celebrity, Adam Saleh, who was, he says, kicked off a flight for speaking Arabic to his mother. And he actually has a video that he took with his cell phone showing him being removed from this flight by Delta Airlines personnel.
Not that it matters, but was it a domestic or international flight? Do we know?
I believe it was an international flight, but he's being kicked off the flight by these Delta Airlines personnel, has this video calling the passengers who complained about him racist because he was speaking Arabic and they complained, and he uses this hashtag boycott Delta. And so the internet has seized on this. A lot of people saying that Delta Airlines is racist, that the passengers are racist, that they kicked him off for looking different, speaking Arabic. And Delta Airlines has had to submit a statement, put out a statement on social media saying this is under investigation.
But not denying it, right?
But not denying it, just saying they're looking into it. Yeah. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. Here's the wrinkle in this whole story. Saleh has previously claimed to have smuggled himself onto a flight in a suitcase in the cargo hold, and that was proved false. So he's known for being kind of a jokester on YouTube, doing some of these practical joke kind of things.
That's no joke.
Well, this is the thing, too. People are wondering if this is false, if he made this whole thing up. But even if he did, a lot of people are saying, does it really matter? Because this is something that people encounter every day. And even if it didn't necessarily happen to him and he was staging this or this was made up, this is a snapshot of what happens to people in the U.S. and around the world based on their looks, based on how they dress, based on what they're saying, what language they're speaking. So it really has kicked off quite a debate on social media. I don't know if anyone is actually going to boycott Delta Airlines because of this. I don't know if that hashtag is going to have any staying power. But I think what will is a conversation about, A, how these profiling events happen, and B, what we should and shouldn't believe, even if we see it on social media, even if it's in a video.
It all brings up the fake news situation.
You know what? It always goes back to that.
It does. How do you vet this stuff?
How do you believe what, even if it's a video, do you believe what you see?
Right, exactly. Because anything can be doctored.
Yeah, well, we will see.
We keep coming back to the same topic over and over again.
I wonder why. It's, you know, it's, it's
no,
a big news topic.
It's one of the prime questions facing our society now. There's no doubt about it.
It is. Well, I'm glad we're talking about it on this show because somebody needs to.
Yeah, I think so. But we have both been vetted, both Andrew and I.
Yes.
We always tell the truth. What else is happening on social media?
Well, we also have, and this may be of interest to our listeners and perhaps could be viewers out there soon, Facebook has announced that in addition to doing its Facebook Live video, they're going to start doing live audio in the new year. So much like you would do a live video, you can click on the icon to do an audio program and broadcast a radio show, hint, hint, International Edition. Everybody out there can listen, hopefully, in the future.
That means this works from the Bahamas, right?
Isn't it great when in the mobile age we can just work from wherever as long as we have our phones with us
in
the cell phone
service?
So we may be seeing this in the new year. Right now they're testing it out with some news organizations and some networks, but they're planning to roll that out widely after the first of the year. So not just us, but even our listeners out there, amateur podcasters out there, could be using Facebook to do that.
Well, it has already started to change the whole media landscape as far as news is concerned, with iPhones, cameras being used in, and Skype being used in news coverage. And now we're just expanding it to radio and other audio platforms.
We already have YouTube celebrities, and now we may have podcast celebrities on Facebook. We'll see.
It's not fake. At least we don't think it's fake. Andrew Palaszewski, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you again tomorrow. You here tomorrow?
I'm here tomorrow.
That's right. You do sleep here, don't you? This is International Edition. Here are the top stories in the world. The search is underway for a new suspect in Monday's truck rampage in Berlin. The final evacuations of rebels and civilians from the northern city of Aleppo has resumed after being delayed for a day. Russia says it's too early to draw conclusions about the shooter responsible for the assassination of the country's ambassador to Turkey. And a massive explosion killed at a popular fireworks market near Mexico City killed at least 31 people and injured 70 others. Coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The Earth's core, which lies nearly 3,000 kilometers below the surface, is made of two layers. At the very center of the Earth is the inner core, which scientists say is a solid sphere made of an iron-nickel alloy. Surrounding the inner core is the outer core, which is made of molten iron and nickel. That's believed to be between 4,000 and 5,000 degrees Celsius. New data gathered by the European Space Agency's three-satellite swarm network is providing scientists with an X-ray view of the Earth's core. This information has led to the discovery of a jet stream flowing within the molten outer core. Like the jet stream of air currents flowing in the atmosphere, scientists explain that this jet stream in the outer core is a moving belt of molten material circling its magnetic north pole and traveling at a speed of about 40 kilometers per year. Researchers who made the discovery say this jet stream lines up with a boundary between two regions within the core. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Here on International Edition, we continue. Syrian activists say the last evacuations of rebels and civilians from the northern city of Aleppo are being held up. They were, while the government and opposition blamed each other for the delay, but that delay has now come to an end, and we do understand that the evacuation is underway again. President Barack Obama yesterday permanently banned new oil and gas drilling in large sections of the Arctic and Atlantic Oceans just weeks before a new pro-drilling administration takes over the White House. The president's order, made jointly with a similar move by Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, affects 46.5 million hectares of the Arctic off Alaska, 1.5 million hectares of the Atlantic from New England to the Chesapeake Bay. However, the American Petroleum Institute criticized the president's order, says it's blocking offshore exploration and it would weaken our national security, destroy good-paying jobs, and could make energy less affordable for consumers. Michael Bruin is the executive director of the environmental protection group, the Sierra Club. He joined my colleague Lori London to talk about this. And here's what he had to say after Lori asked him, I imagine you're pretty pleased with this.
It's pretty clear that the Arctic is one of the world's treasures from an environmental standpoint. It's a host to a variety of marine mammals and other wildlife, and it's also a place that is suffering from the effects of climate change. So the announcement from Trudeau and Obama is an important step forward in our effort to move away from fossil fuels and embrace clean energy.
My understanding is that this is a permanent protection of nearly the entire Arctic Ocean and part of the Atlantic Ocean. Is that actually permanent, or would that really depend on the next administration, which could theoretically reverse this?
This is a permanent protection. In the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act, which was signed in the 1950s, bipartisan legislation at the time, it gives the president the authority to basically permanently protect any area of ocean, in this case, from any kind of resource extraction. And it doesn't provide a provision to unprotect a particular area. This protection, we feel, is secured. It is true that Congress could act and rewrite that law, undermine this provision. There could be attacks coming from the court, but this is not the first time a president has taken action in this way, and we think it's likely that the next Congress and the next administration will probably have a whole lot of other priorities than deciding to go into one of the most pristine areas on the planet and allow for more oil drilling.
Do you expect President Obama to do anything else like this in the next few weeks of his presidency?
We do. Sierra Club members have been encouraging the president to use his authority under the Antiquities Act, which is something that almost every president has done over the last 100 years, to protect ecologically valuable and culturally valuable places on land. We have been encouraging the president to protect areas around Grand Canyon National Park from uranium mining that would be within the watershed of the Colorado River. And we're encouraging him to protect desert canyon areas in Utah that are the home to 5 different Native American tribes, and to protect that area from resource extraction as well.
How concerned are you about the new administration's talk about more use of oil and some of their other potential policies regarding climate?
We're very concerned. Look, you know, we have to keep the lights on and the economy running forward. Everybody understands that. But to have a president and what looks to be almost his entire cabinet to deny that climate change is real and to deny the responsibility and obligation that we have to act on that is very concerning. And it's particularly concerning when every country in the world right now, except for Nicaragua, has made a commitment to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions and to begin to switch to clean energy. Increasingly, CEOs are making similar commitments. Mayors across the country are making similar commitments. So to have this administration be such an outlier is a very dangerous position for us to be in.
Does your organization have any plans to address these concerns?
Absolutely. Look, Sierra Club has been around for 125 years. We have been around for Democratic administrations, Republican administrations, certain presidencies that were very pro-environment and anti-environment. It's likely to be an extreme presidency, and we will give the next administration the political fight of their lives if they try to undermine the bedrock environmental safeguards for clean air, clean water, and clean energy that have been put into place over the past few years and the past several decades.
Michael Bruin, executive director of the environmental protection group, the Sierra Club, speaking with Lori London. This is International Edition on VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Here on International Edition, we're going to tell you about a new sci-fi film coming out. It's called Passengers. People on Earth are on a 120-year trip to colonize a new planet, but something goes wrong on their way there. Scientists say while much of the movie is a work of fiction, there is some real science behind many of the ideas contained therein. VOA's Elizabeth Lee in Los Angeles explores what they are.
In the movie Passengers, humans hibernate for a 120-year voyage to a distant planet for a new life.
We woke up 90 years too soon.
Finding a habitable planet is not so far-fetched for Tiffany Kataria, a NASA scientist who studies planets that orbit another star or exoplanets.
The ultimate goal of studying exoplanets is to really find an Earth twin, to find some other planet out there that's Earth-like that maybe eventually we could colonize one day and explore.
In the movie, the passengers travel on a rotating spaceship to create gravity. The idea is not just science fiction, says aerospace engineer John Bradford.
So that's one of the main ways we're going to mitigate some of the challenges and things that come out in microgravity environment, damage to the human body in terms of bone demineralization and muscle atrophy. Having this artificial gravity solves those problems, and rotating it is the best way to do it, I think.
As for hibernating in space, that's what Bradford's company, SpaceWorks Enterprises, is researching with the hope that it could be used for human flight to Mars. One of the possible effects of spending time in space and long-term microgravity is intracranial pressure, which impairs an astronaut's vision. Bradford says that's something hibernation or human stasis can help, among other benefits.
Actually, cooling down the body, reducing the metabolism, reduces that intracranial pressure. It's one of the treatments here on Earth. We reduce the amount of food they need, amount of oxygen. We can put them in a very small space, as you see here.
Bradford says his company would first start human status for 2 weeks.
That 2 weeks is within current medical technology. It's limited data set, but that has been done before. But ultimately, to get the full benefits, we want to be able to go to 5 or 6 months. And, you know, that will take years, you know, maybe 15 years or so, 20 years to really fully understand all the impacts on the crew. But for the shorter stay and the shorter duration, these 2 week cycles, you know, we're optimistic we could be ready to support the first missions to Mars. So we just got to convince NASA.
As for human space flights beyond Mars and our solar system, that's where science ends and the fiction begins.
So the closest planet we know of that's actually, it's actually close to an Earth mass. It's called Proxima Centauri B. Proxima Cen is 4.2 light years away. And so that's about 25 trillion miles from here. The Juno spacecraft is orbiting Jupiter at 1,000 miles per hour. And so relative to Jupiter, but if we think about that same spacecraft getting maybe a gravity assist and going to Proxima Centauri B, that would take at that same speed you know, tens of thousands of years. So really, you know, the technology still needs to make that leap, I think, to be able to achieve light speed travel or close to light speed travel.
It may take years of technology to catch up to the imagination, but audiences can still experience the excitement of space travel by going to movie theaters. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
There's a reason we woke up early.
Don't know what that is. This is VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
Let's get caught up on some of the stories we're covering here at VOA. Defeated Gambian President Yahya Jammeh insisted today he would not leave office at the end of his mandate in January until a court rules on his challenge to the outcome of this month's election. Jammeh, who's been in power in the West African country for 22 years, has rejected the victory of opposition candidate Adama Barrow in the December 1st vote. He said unless the court decides the case, there will be no inauguration of Barrow on the 19th of January, he said. And Jammeh had initially conceded defeat, but then lodged a complaint with the Supreme Court to overturn the result. In a lengthy television address, he said, "What we're asking for is not for the Independent Election Commission to declare me the winner. I can't do that," he said. "Justice must be done," he said, "and the only way justice can be done is to reorganize the election so that every Gambian votes." He said that's the only way we can resolve the matter peacefully and fairly. Grammy Award-winning singer James Taylor has canceled a concert in the Philippines next February in protest to alleged extrajudicial killings during President Rodrigo Duterte's brutal war on drugs. In his official website, James Taylor said, "I don't think of my music as being particularly political, but sometimes one is called upon to make a political stand." The U.S. star, who beat back drug addiction in his youth before finding global fame with his singing and songwriting, called narcotics dependence a scourge, and a worldwide problem which sovereign nations should address by lawful means. However, he said, but recent reports from the Philippines of summary executions of suspected offenders without trial or judicial process are deeply concerning. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us, if you will, at voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Nick Ivanoff. I'm Ira Melman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The deaths of three more top ISIL leaders by a coalition airstrike was recently announced by the Pentagon. Two of the leaders, Salah Gormat and Sami Jadu, were involved in facilitating the November 13, 2015 terrorist attacks in Paris. The third, Walid Hamon, was a suicide attack planner convicted in absentia in Belgium for a terror plot disrupted in 2015. Brett McGurk, special envoy for Global Coalition to Counter ISIL, said the three join a growing list of key ISIL leaders who have been targeted and eliminated. At a press briefing, Mr. McGurk spoke of other successes in the fight: the significant shrinking of the territory of the so-called caliphate, the dwindling number of battle-ready ISIL fighters inside Iraq and Syria, the ongoing destruction of ISIL's economic base, the substantial decrease in ISIL messaging on the internet, the degrading of ISIL's affiliates across the board, including in Libya, the Lake Chad Basin, and Afghanistan. Mr. McGurk also pointed to the enormous pressure being put on ISIL by the campaigns to take back its two so-called capitals of Mosul and Raqqa. The successes have not come without cost to the coalition. Special Envoy McGurk noted the deaths of five U.S. military personnel who have been killed in the fight so far. He spoke of the casualties suffered by Iraqi security forces who are fighting heroically to retake their territory. He also pointed to the more than 1,000 casualties suffered by Syrian Democratic forces in the crucial battle to retake Manbij in Syria. "It is significant," Mr. McGurk said, "that all ground that we have taken as a coalition, working with locals, none of it ISIL has been able to retake. And that is because before we do any of this, we make a tremendous effort to prepare the ground politically, economically, to get the stabilization resources in place, to help make sure people can return to their homes and make sure that the defeat of ISIL is a lasting one." Special Envoy McGurk declared that ISIL remains a threat, both to the Syrians and Iraqis under its control. And because of the group's recruitment of deranged individuals from all over the world to act in their name. But overall, the campaign against ISIL, he said, has momentum. We're always looking for ways to accelerate it, and we will not stop until we destroy this enemy.
That was an editorial.